So in Texas, the main, at least historically, the main lender liability case is the FARA decision, which Joe is going to talk about.
Yeah, thanks, Phil, for going through that summary of the claims that lead to potential lender liability. FARA is the seminal case in Texas, and I will tell you, before the Bailey case that we're going to talk about was ruled on, if you asked practitioners, is lender liability a viable theory in Texas, I would speculate that at least half the practitioners would say, not really, you really don't see it anymore. Maybe some of you would say, well, it's out there, it's possible, but it's very rare. I think that the Bailey case actually turns that thinking on its head. Any discussion of lender liability in Texas requires a discussion of the FARA case, and importantly, notice the date of that, 1984. So it's been a long time before there was a seminal or an important monumental lender liability decision. What's important about FARA is this. Remember, Phil stepped through the bases for a lender liability claim, and he started with breach of contract. And that's usually what the claims were based on. But FARA recognized that there was a broadening or a way to broaden the bases for liability by looking at traditional tort theories of fraud, duress, and tortious interference. So let me tell you the facts very quickly in FARA. FARA was a family-owned apparel manufacturing in El Paso, Texas. The El Paso Bank, that was the agent for the bank syndicate, entered into a refinancing agreement. It had an interesting provision, though, which was a change in control provision. It was put in there to keep William Farah, the former owner, manager, CEO of Farah, from returning to that position because the banks blamed him for the financial distress that the company was facing. Mr. FARA eventually maneuvered himself into being reinstated to management. And most of the company's directors and management either, one, didn't care, or they were indifferent to Mr. FARA coming back in. Indeed, some of them actually wanted him back in. At that point, the lenders had a choice, right? Look at your loan documents, and it says, if you violate this change in control provision, we can declare a default and exercise our remedies, or we could do nothing. But instead, they took a very strange action. At an all-hands meeting of management and lenders, the El Paso Bank's lawyers bluffed the directors into withholding support for Mr. Farah and forcing his ultimate removal. The lenders basically said, if Mr. Farah is appointed, we will exercise our rights under the change in control. And the court found that William Farah was not acceptable as CEO, that the lender said Mr. Farah was not acceptable as the CEO, that the banks would bankrupt the company and they'd padlock the doors. And the court went on to find that all of those statements were false threats. Now, eventually, Mr. Farah comes back into control of the company when the loan was refinanced. And he went further and actually restored profitability to the company, so he did what you might suspect. He sued the lenders. Interestingly, the lenders at the time of the refinancing asked for a waiver of claims, a release. And Farah just said, no, I'm not going to do it. And instead of them, you know, demanding and pushing, they just said, okay, we won't worry about that. We'll hope he doesn't sue. Well, after a 2.5-month trial, Farah received a significant, particularly when you think back to, it was 1984, an almost $20 million judgment against the bank. The court found that the El Paso Bank, either acting alone or in concert with the other lenders, committed acts of duress, interference, and fraud, resulting in damages to Farah. On fraud, what the judge said was the banks had a right to call a default based on the change in management, but they misrepresented their intent to do so. On interference, the judge found that the lenders interfered both with Farah's operations and its management, And on duress, the jury determined that the lenders acted in bad faith, which constituted duress. So I think if you look back now on FARA, you find that it was never overruled. It was never even criticized. It's still good law. And it was relied upon heavily by the bankruptcy judge in the Bailey case. Unlike Bailey, FARA actually survived and became a viable entity after it had its financial difficulties. Oftentimes, you see these lender liability claims where the company is no longer around or it's been liquidated. Remember, I told you it was a bank group, right? And I keep referring to the El Paso Bank. That's because right before trial, all the other banks settled out.